I'm here at the UN to attend the Commission on the Status of Women to push governments and NGOs to reaffirm that women's rights are human rights.
Can you share some of the challenges that women and girls face?
Well, there are many challenges women and girls face. The first challenge is that they are not often seen as rights bearers or equal citizens in many countries, equal to men. And I think the challenge of being seen as a lesser human compared to another is already in and of itself a huge barrier to well-being.
And how can journalists and the media help to confront these challenges?
Well, I think the journalists and media can do several things to confront challenges and kind of push up the idea of women's human rights, or that stigma and discrimination faced by women is not okay, or violence against women is not okay. And this is because they can start covering stories in a more sensitive way, where they are trying to get stories that increase the idea of rights for women rather than just protecting women. Because protection of women just means keeping them indoors. So moving from a more protectionist approach to a more human rights approach. I think that the other ways in which media can help is in making sure the consistency and the continuity with it. So it's not like a one-off story once, but to repeatedly cover stories around gender equality, both the negative side as well as the affirmative side, so that you can shape public opinion and public mindsets around the fact that women are worthy of human rights equal to men, equal to others. Media has a big role to play. The issue is, how do you shift? How do you use media to do norm shifts or culture shifts? For example, in India, son preference continues to be an issue that is very prevalent. People prefer the birth of sons over the birth of girls. And I think that results in women and girls not being valued in society. So I think the media can do a norm shift or a culture shift by repeatedly covering stories of what it means when you only celebrate the birth of boys and not the birth of girls. And is this a phenomena that exists in other parts of the world? And there is this idea that boys will grow up and look after their parents. There is no evidence that that's necessarily the case. So it's all tied up in patriarchy. How does media simplify these stories without reducing them, so that the mindset of the public changes? And once the mindset changes, you have managed to culture shift.
And why is it important for the media to use a gender-sensitive lens?
Because otherwise their stories would be harmful to half the population of the world that are women, or they would not be addressing the power imbalances between different people that result in gender-based violence, stigma and discrimination. So once you have a gender-sensitive lens, the way you cover a story will be different. The way you say, you know, the way you kind of judge whether things are right or wrong and how you write about it will be different.
Would you be able to maybe share an example of any media story that made a positive change for women?
In India, we have been working with about 5,000 women journalists so that they can cover stories in this very sensitive way. One example is covering stories which talk about women who say yes or no, and that one-time consent is not blanket consent. So the way the media has covered, there's a big conversation about consent in India. And even in our law right now on homosexuality that got decriminalized, the idea that consensual sex amongst adults in private should not be criminalized. And I think that came through a systemic approach whereby movements worked with media to cover stories around consent, you know, making consent the standard by which you judge something as right or wrong.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about your organization.
My organization is CREA. We're a feminist, global South human rights organization, and we have basically four aims. One is to advance feminist leadership, which includes building the self-esteem, self-confidence of women and girls so that they do feel that they have rights. And the second part of Kriya's work is about advancing sexual reproductive health and rights, how women and girls and everyone control their body, what choices they make, autonomy, who they choose to have sex with, who they marry. All these are ideas that are very contested by many other stakeholders. So we try to advance this idea that women and girls need choices. They should have the autonomy to make decisions about their bodies. The third part of our work is around gender-based violence and well-being. So what we say is it's not enough to just stop the individual harm, but we also need to work on the structures that keep this harm in place. And we also need to work on the positive side of rights, like what kind of world should women live in? And the last piece of our work is around constituencies, women that are left out of women's rights organizing. We work a lot with people with disabilities, we work with sex workers, we work with lesbian women, trans people, because this idea is that they sometimes have not been included in feminist organizing or on work that is on violence against women. We do a lot of advocacy and we do a lot of public education. Those are the four strategies with which we approach our work.
What do you hope to get from attending the conference on the status of women?
This time, Kriya has three agendas at the Commission on the Status of Women. One is I am speaking at a lot of donor events around the idea of intersectionality, which is that women's lives are not siloed. Things are interconnected, and you could be a disabled woman that is queer. And how do donors increase their funding for gender-based violence, but using an intersectional lens? I think the other part of Kriya's work is about advancing the rights of women with disabilities. We have a much expanded program on women with disabilities, but what we want to talk about is really the cross-section of sexual and reproductive health and rights of women with disabilities. So we are going to a number of sessions where there will be discussions around issues of women with disabilities, and we are trying to bring in the component of sexuality and gender and rights.
As an Indian woman yourself, have you come across any discrimination growing up in India?
Well, I've come across discrimination against women or me everywhere, including in the US, where I lived for many years. I was seen as an immigrant. I was seen as a native. I was seen as a woman of color that didn't have an equal voice to a person who was white. So I think discrimination is really malleable. It moves around based on where you have privilege and where that privilege goes away. So I've seen both. In India, I was born in a family with three girls, and I didn't face that inside my home as much. I think it was more like you got these messages through societal norms. We were lucky that we went to schools where we weren't discriminated against. So I think it's an interesting idea about discrimination, because sometimes it doesn't necessarily happen within your family, but it's more societal, or it's more in the law where you're not equal. Inheritance laws in India, sometimes we're not equal. So you, like in the US, you know, the right to vote for women came long after all Indians had the right to vote. So for me, I feel like it's a much bigger project of the patriarchy. Anti-gender project that we are fighting is huge, and we can't remain silent.
What prompted you to become such an activist?
I think what prompted me was when I moved to the US and I became an immigrant, and I saw that immigrant women who were facing abuse from their husbands didn't have any recourse, because they had come into the country because they had married men and their residency and their green card was caught up in remaining married to their abusers. And that led some of us to start an organization that is called Sakhi for South Asian Women. And it basically addresses violence against all women of South Asian origin. And we worked at the policy level on the VAWA bill. So I think that led me to really immerse myself in this work. The idea of doing something that makes a difference, makes another world possible, is what I was drawn toward.